Okay, we are in chapter 22 on the top of numbers. It's Kuf Lamed Dalet, which would be 267 on the top numbers. I stopped giving the bottom numbers because there's different editions now. Chapter 22, letter number 22 of Agaras HaKodesh, is basically referred to colloquially as the Leave Me Alone letter. The Alter Rebbe in 1793 sent out a very long letter to the Hasidim.
Yeah.
More than half of the letter actually is not included here in Tanya.
Really?
It first appeared in a work called Hatamim, which was a rabbinic journal put out by the yeshiva in Otwock, Poland.
Okay.
And they had like collected stuff where they would put all kinds of like really cool stuff into, and the definitions. Yeah. I don't know if it's still available at Kahas, but it was a one volume set,
yeah.
One volume of these little pamphlets that would come out monthly
really?
For a couple of years.
Wow.
And it had all this really interesting stuff in it. Like one of them was the rest of this letter, because the Tanya had already been printed,
right.
But his letter, and then it also appears in something called Agaras HaKodesh Ma'admar HaZaken, which is a book of letters of the Alter Rebbe, which I think there's an existent, like, two small volumes.
Really?
Of such things. Like you have the letter, you have the 31st volume of the letters came from the Rebbe, and they already have 32 already at the binder. So for the Alter Rebbe, they have just like a couple volumes.
Hmm.
Because you're talking things that are, 300 years old already.
Right.
So the most of the letter deals with coming to Liyoshin to visit the Rebbe.
Hmm.
And the different conditions and when people can come and how they can come, how long they can stay for, what they have to do when they're here, what they have to do before they come, the directives and protocol of Yechidus. This
really?
Is all in this letter.
Wow.
Okay, so in the middle of this letter, so the Alter Rebbe writes about this foolish idea of asking a Chacham personal advice about physical problems.
Okay.
This has been a problem, you might say, for all the Rebbes. The Friedrich Rebbe writes in the notes on that letter in Hatamim, that he writes that from the time the Tzemach Tzedek had this problem, the Tzemach Tzedek had close to a million Hasidim. And for him to handle the daily mail, you might say, it was overwhelming.
A million Hasidim?
He had a million. Tzemach Tzedek had him throughout Russia and White Russia and Lithuania. It was in, the Ukraine and in Georgia. He had a million Hasidim. It was a good thing, kind of, I would think, that they all didn't decide to come to Lubavitch at the same time.
Yeah, probably.
Because I think Lubavitch was half the size of Oak Park.
You know? Exactly.
A million people in half the size of Oak Park is going to be a little bit squishy.
Yeah.
You know, considering, I don't even think there were any paved roads in Lubavitch at the time, so. So, the Rebbe also, I believe it was, I want to say 1984, but it might have been later. It might have been 1980. Yeah, I think it was 1984. Maybe it was early. I don't remember the exact year. But the Rebbe also quoted this letter here,
mm-hmm.
and said that basically, you guys have to start leaving me alone. Because when I was sitting and learning 770, I witnessed every single day the mailman came with two gunny sacks full of letters for the Rebbe. And the first thing that they would come, first thing in the morning, and Binyamin Klein, Leibel Groner, the first thing that they would do is they would just take a letter opener and open all these letters.
Right.
So that the Rebbe wouldn't have to waste time opening the letters.
Right.
They wouldn't read them.
Right.
I believe they would take out the check, if there was a check inside, but the letters, and the Rebbe would go through these letters every single day. So, you're talking hundreds of letters a day. Now, when I get
a gunny sack, it's probably more like thousands.
Yeah, it was like he was walking like this, like he's like, and he could see his muscles with the torque holding these letters.
Yeah, that's not hundreds, that's thousands.
Okay. What are you talking about? He got every single day, two of them.
Gee whiz.
Okay, it was a major part of the Rebbe's day, was answering letters. You know, so in 1978, when the Rebbe had his heart attack, so the call went out, don't write any letters to the Rebbe. Okay, and after like a week of that, the Rebbe said, what are people being stupid on my account? Don't they understand that this is what I live for? Hello? But later on, so he said, listen, what do we get questions on? You can't questions on, let's say, a lot of people write when a person's sick.
Right.
So he says, go ask a doctor. And really what you should do is ask two or three doctors is really what you should do. And then be able to formulate an opinion from that. And if you have a legal question, go ask a lawyer. You have a business question, go find some business person who's got experience with what it is that you have. Okay, and then he says, if you have some kind of religious question, go get yourself a rav. Everybody needs to have a mashpia. That's when the mashpia movement started. In every city he was appointed to have a mashpia. And the Rebbe said, I want to know who your mashpia is. And your mashpia should be involved with your life. And he should set up a seder of learning for you. And he should test you on a regular basis. This is what the Rebbe set up.
Whoa.
Okay? And that went on for about 3 weeks. And people didn't write to the Rebbe, very few people. Was I in Morristown? My memory's not sufficing. Something tells me I was in Kola when that was. So after 3 weeks, the Rebbe asked Label Groner, where's all the letters? And the Label Groner told the Rebbe, you told people not to write. And the Rebbe said, it's okay, people can write. And then the Gunny Sack started coming back. Okay, yeah. So it was the same deal with the Alter Rebbe.
Yeah.
Okay. So he says, Ayave Achai Verei.
More than mother wants to give milk from the calf.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. He says, my beloved, my brethren, my friends. We had this opening, I believe in the beginning of the last, though, where was Yud Zion, maybe? It was back there. We had the same type of, I don't remember where it was. No, it wasn't before Yud Zion. No, Tess Zion, 16. Uh-huh. Starts out the same way. So I noticed in the note today that the expression Ayavai refers to mankind. Achai, my brethren, refers to Jews. As Jews are all brethren one for the other. Rei, my friends, means specifically the followers of the Rebbe. Meaning, we refer to the word as Anash. I don't know if you've ever heard that yes. abbreviation. Yes. It stands for Anshei Shlomeinu, meaning our guys.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
The Chassidim.
Okay, are called Anash.
Anash.
Yes. Uh-huh. So Vareya refers to Anash. He's sending this out to people who are his followers, because if somebody's not his follower, they're not going to be asking questions of him anyway.
Right.
So, I mean...
But wait a minute. If that's the case, then why are you opening it, my beloved? Mankind.
We are... what he wants to do is generally we talk when we're doing in this when we're talking in groups we always go from the expression has been a klal, a prat.
Right.
We go from the general to the more detailed. Specific.
Yeah.
So that those members who are the specific group understand the magnanimity of it, that yes, we are part of a greater group, but this is because a person who's not a follower of the Alter Rebbe is not going to write him a letter.
Right.
Okay, there is this idea with his kashrus. Did he tell you the story that I was invited to one of these Rebbe Tishes that was in town? I don't know, last year, the year before. Somebody in town had one of these Rebbelas come to town.
Yeah.
As is wont to happen in Detroit. You get all kinds of guys. You get the Clevelander Rebbe comes, and the Rizhna Rebbe comes, and these guys, they come. The Stolener comes. Mm. So he invited me to says, listen, I have this Rebbe coming to me and come from Alava Malka.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get a bracha from the Rebbe.
Mm-hmm.
So I told him, I'm not coming. And he got upset. Listen, you're my friend, you know this, and I'm inviting you, and it's not going to cost you anything. And he says, I said, I'm concerned that if I get a bracha from this Rebbe, it will interfere with my connection that I have with the Rebbe. Mm-hmm. Because really, you can only be connected, the word is mekusher, to one place. You only have one lifeline to connect. So he just went, oh, posh. I said, so I told him, you ask the Rebbe when he comes to town about okay. it. So he said, the Rebbe came to town and he asked him, he said, listen, I have a friend who's a Lubavitcher, and I invited him from a Lava Malka. He should come and eat in my house and, you know, to hear the Rebbe's Vertlach and get a bracha from the Rebbe. And he said he didn't want to get a bracha from the Rebbe because he's afraid it will, the expression is shot in his kashrus. It'll affect his connection with his Rebbe. So the Rebbe just simply responded, it's a valid concern.
Okay.
So somebody who's not a follower of the Alter Rebbe doesn't need this letter.
Right.
Because he's not writing anyway.
I hear. Okay.
Okay. Me'ave mesuteres teichachas magula libay. So he says, with a hidden love within me, I would give reproof with a revealed heart. So the fact that he calls this, the Rebbe didn't say it as a reproof. The Rebbe, when he asked people, don't write me, he basically said, it's more than I can handle, and you can set up the thing yourself. And the Hasidim have always said, the Chabad Hasidic approach has always been, do it yourself.
Yeah.
The Alter Rebbe's approach was, I will give you the tools
right.
for you to work yourself. Right. So you have the right. tools, so go do it yourself. That was the way the Rebbe explained it. Yes. But here, the Alter Rebbe is sort of like ranking people out. He said, no, you guys are doing something wrong. So he starts out with this expression, ayve achive reyoi. Specifically, he gets to go right to the statement and say, listen, I have to reprove you on something that you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Could have started that way.
Right.
But it says there's an expression that before you slap somebody, you have to cut your nails.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Okay, meaning that it shouldn't be such a...
Shouldn't be so severe.
So it shouldn't be such a severe slap.
Right.
Okay, and that the Alter Rebbe here starts out with Oive Achiv Reai as a way of connecting, saying, listen, this is only an expression because I love you so much.
Right. I'm only telling you this because it's me, because it's important.
Yeah.
Right.
I love you so much, and it's reproof, yeah, and you should know that this is a reproof that's not coming out of a sense of meanness, but it's coming from a place of love.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, because ultimately, the expression is it's higher when somebody else does it, but it's more appreciated when you do it yourself. Right. I don't remember how it goes. That expression goes in Yiddish,
but
you can understand it as Yenem is Gresserabur, Fazich is Besser, I think is the expression.
Mm.
Okay, when you do, you have your own sense of accomplishment when you work on something and you do it yourself. Mm. Okay, it means something to you because you see how what was involved with doing it. And we remember the days of the world for the years that have gone by, generation to generation. So he says basically what she's saying is, look back. When did you ever see? Did you ever see in previous, in your, like years ago, days ago? It starts out days ago, years ago, generation to generation. Did people come to rabbis and ask them about business matters?
Right.
No, people didn't do that. V'ha'isa k'zeis mi'mais olam. It says, this is, but going back to like, we don't know what happened generations ago. And years ago is also a long time ago, but recently, I mean, this is 1793, he set up shop in 1773, but it might have been 1776.
Hmm.
But so it's like 20 years, less than 20 years that he's
right, right, right.
Okay, because up until that time, the Baal Shem Tov and the Mezitcher Magid saw people who had problems, who were coming to ask for the Baal Shem Tov, the Mezitcher Magid, to pray on their behalf, that Hashem should have Rachmanis on them.
Right.
Comes now the students, the Talmidim of the Mezitcher Magid, This is like third generation. Yeah. And suddenly people are not asking for the Rebbe to pray on their behalf or pray for them.
Right.
They're asking advice, which is something the Baal Shem Tov didn't do. People did not come to the Baal Shem Tov to ask, should I get involved with this business? Should I get involved with that business? Or the Mizrach HaMagid either?
No.
Okay, everything with the stories that we have with people coming to them were all problems in Avodas Hashem.
Ruchnius matter.
Yeah.
Ruchnius.
So it wasn't until the next generation, the third generation, that they came down like that. So this is, you look at the Baal Shem Tov, you look at the Mizrach HaMagid, they didn't deal with this kind of stuff.
Right.
Says, whoever heard, you go to a rabbi and you ask him, Rabbi, what should I do with this business deal?
Yeah.
He says, you never heard such a thing.
Should I buy the white car or the blue car?
Yeah. You know, so it's It was definitely, there are certain times when it was expected for a person to write to the Rebbe. One of the times was, should I buy this house? There was actually, at some point, that was actually very interesting, the way that it was done. They had in the office, they had a Selectric typewriter. That was the brand, Selectric. Okay, it was quasi programmable,
right?
Okay, and I don't know how it worked. It was before computers, and it wasn't a word processor. It was a typewriter,
right?
An electric typewriter. And Benjamin Klein would sit down. He'd take the piece of paper and he put it in, okay, and he hit a button, and the thing would go, and it would stop,
right?
And then he would like type in the name,
right?
Okay, and he hit the button, and it would pick it up, and it would spit out the rest of the letter, So, and they had in this thing, he had different buttons. So one was for the birth of a boy, the birth of a girl, an upshornish, a bar mitzvah. I think it was also definitely a bat mitzvah letter, an engagement, a wedding,
right?
And buying a house.
Really?
We're all in that programmable typewriter. And they just spat them out.
Why buying a house?
It's a major decision.
Sure it is.
You know, there's a lot of money involved with buying a house.
Sure,
and the Rebbe was interested in strengthening neighborhoods.
Okay. All right.
So there were many people who asked if they could move from Crown Heights, were told no. Maybe I got this house like in Muncie. Who needs Muncie? You got Crown Heights. So the Rebbe was very much interested in strengthening the shchuna. There were lots of talks about people moving into Crown Heights.
Hmm. Really?
So, Afligadeli Chachma Yisrael Rishayna Ketanayim Vamarayim. It says, even if you look, you talk about the great the scholars of the Mishnah and the Gemara, Asher Kol Raz Le'Anis Lehu. It says, the world was an open book to them.
Right.
Okay, which is being modest, because the world was an open book to him too.
Of course it was.
You know, so. I mean, it very simply says that Istakel Kodesh Baruch Hu Baraisa Ubara Alma. Hashem looked in the Torah to create the world. Istakel Tzadikaya Baraisa Wakaima Alma. And the tzaddikim look into the Torah to keep the world going.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, so they have a clear vision of what has to be done.
Right.
I mean, there are stories with rabbis and what they actually physically saw. By the birth of the Maharash, I believe there was a 25-year difference between the oldest child of the Tzemach Tzedek and the youngest child.
How much?
25 years.
25, okay.
Yeah, I think so. They got
appreciate that.
She was either 15 or 16 when she got married, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So 25 and 15 is 41. You know, that's not unheard of for a woman to give birth at 41.
Got. Let's see, my oldest is, she'll be 36. And no, there's 23 years. So my youngest is going to be 13.
Okay. So it happens with the same lady.
With the same lady.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It happens.
It happens.
She was 11 when you got married.
No, she was 15.
Oh, okay. same like the Same like this, the Rebbe Tzinchai Moshe.
Yeah.
Okay, so the Rebbe Marash is born. He was number 10.
Yeah.
So they had the day of the bris. They got everybody together. It's a big thing. The Rebbe's making a bris. You can imagine hoo-ha. Like anybody within a week's notice was there.
Yeah, of course.
So the bris was called for 8 o'clock in the morning after davening.
Right.
Okay, so Tzemach Tzedek went into his room. And he said, I'll be out shortly. Okay? 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. So at
2:30?
The only one, at about 2:30, the Maril, who was the Rebbe's second or third son, who had quite a lot of gumption.
Yeah.
He walked in and said, he saw his father standing out at the window, looking out the window.
Right.
Okay. So he said, the Ulam Vart, people are waiting for the bris. Is it going to be today? And the Tzemach Tzedek said, he would appreciate it if people waited. The bris will be today. At 4 o'clock, he came out.
Yeah.
Okay. And they had the bris, and they named the kid Shmuel. Okay, he became the Rebbe Marash.
Mm.
Okay. At the meal, the Maharil said, who is he named after? There are no Shmuels in our family. Okay, before that, there are a lot of names that are like considered Hasidic names. You know, there's Schneur Zalmans all over the place, and there's Dov Bears, and there's Menachem Mendels. There was no Shmuel.
Mm.
So he said, I don't remember exactly the name of the city, but I think he was named after a water carrier in Podolsk. Okay, who died today, and I was waiting for the burial to finish. Evidently, you can't name a person after, if we name after people, it's after they're buried.
Right.
So meaning to say that the Tzemach Tzedek was standing by the window
watching
the funeral.
Right. Right.
Okay, how far is Podolsk from Lubavitch? I don't know. But
it doesn't matter.
At that point, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Okay, because it was for sure beyond like a person's normal line of vision.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so tzaddikim, they have inroad, they could see anyway.
Right.
You know, this is not with, if it's a level of Ruach HaKodesh, if it's a level of prophecy, I don't know how it works because I don't have it. Okay, das ma'ala says, ben yeni erlam azah gashmi, af li gedei lachach mi yisol v'shedim ad marmanim, v'ashir lo zeyon enam enam elav, v'loit nehir lahayin shevilin derekiya, kiim l'nevi'im mamish, says the paths to the heavens were only open to the prophets.
Right.
Okay, great scholars, you know, but is he going to bring in the right now? Shulif Nimi Yisrael Kishmul Haraya Asher Halach Alav Shoyal Lidrash Hashem Al Dvar HaEisnais Shenavde LaAviv. So you have the story in Shmuel Aleph.
Yeah.
In Samuel 1, that Shaul is wandering around. He's looking for donkeys. He comes across Shmuel and he says, can you tell me where my father's donkeys are?
Yeah.
Okay, and he takes out a pitcher of oil, pours it on the guy's head, and tells him the donkeys are home already. Okay, so he asked, he went to this is that would be akin to going to the Rebbe.
Right.
And Shmuel, except probably worse, because Shmuel was a real hard nose. He was a very severe person.
Yes, he was.
Okay, he was like turning into a frog type person.
Yeah, he was. He didn't play any games.
He didn't kid around.
He didn't play any games.
And everything was supposed to be the way it was supposed to be. But Shaul came and asked him, and he told him,
right,
your donkeys are in your father's place. I don't know. So that's a prophet. Okay, so prophets are shown things in a physical world. A prophet is, if a prophet is shown where this guy's donkey is, at that point it becomes a prohibition for the prophet not to tell the guy where his donkeys is, because if a prophet's not allowed, if Navi's not allowed to hide
hold
his nevuah,
right,
he
back,
has
right.
to say it.
Has to say it, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Kibbe Emes calling any Adam Levad Medivrei Teir of Yer Shemaim. Because in actuality, the only thing that a chacham can talk to you about is Torah.
Mm.
Everything else, all that stuff, you have to be a prophet for that. There is a story, and I don't remember the details. It was when the Friedrich Rebbe was in this country, And I'm thinking it may have been when he was here in 1929-1930.
Okay.
Is what I was thinking about it. Not in the 40s, because right. The story did not happen in 770, and it didn't happen in Chicago. Right. The Frida Kahlo went to Chicago in 1942.
Right, okay.
I don't remember where it happened, but there was... So news goes out, oh, the Lubavitcher Rebbe has come to town. You know, it was like a big deal wherever the Lubavitcher Rebbe went. There's somebody found the archived article when the Frida Kahlo came to Detroit in 1929.
Right.
Okay, there was a throng and mass of humanity that met him at the train station. This is big news.
Yeah.
Okay. So news came to town that he's seeing people and giving, offering advice and brachas, these type of things. So there's a group of young guys. They're like older teenagers. Maybe they were like already out of high school, but they didn't go to college. They kind of worked, whatever they did. And they figure they're going to have some fun with this this old world rabbi.
Yes, this old world rabbi.
Okay. And they're gonna go up there and they're gonna teach him what it means to come to America.
Yeah, sure they are.
Okay. I don't remember all the details of the story, but they came to the Frida Kahlo was seeing somebody in somebody's house. It was a personal house.
Right.
They come up on the porch, and they see that the whole downstairs is just filled with people.
Right.
Okay. So they walk in, and there's whoever it was acting as the Rebbe's secretary. Says, "What do you want?" He said, "We want to see the rabbi. The Rebbe. We want to see the rabbi." He says, "What business do you have with the Rebbe?" And I think what they asked, in order to get in favor with the Rebbe, rather than just say we came here to like test him, see what kind of stuff he's made, we're going to test the Rebbe. So they said something to the effect of, I'm not exactly sure, how does the Rebbe foresee the future of American Jewry?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was the question they posed. They said, okay, fine, wait here. They said, we're going to wait outside, it's too crowded. So they're sitting on the porch, they're smoking cigarettes, they're chuckling, back and forth, what are we going to do with this Rebbe? Okay. The secretary comes down like 5 minutes later and says, the Rebbe will see you now. He says, but there's all these people. He said, the Rebbe said he will see you now. Okay, so they came upstairs, and the Rebbe stood up and gave them all shalom and was very excited to see them, and the Rebbe himself got, there was a couple of chairs that needed to be gotten. He himself went and got the chairs, okay, and he sat them down. And the first thing he said was, you're probably wondering why it is that if there's a whole downstairs full of people, I came right to you first. I said, these guys should come in first. So he says, who are the down there? You have people down there that are sick and they want to get better. He says, I'm not a doctor. You have business people that need advice and what business deals they should do. He says, I've sat in yeshiva my whole life. What do I know about business? But you guys came with a question about philosophy and Judaism. That's my specialty. That I can talk to you about. Okay? Which totally, completely disarmed them.
Of course it did.
And by the end of the thing, he had them all agreeing to, some of them said they would keep Shabbos, and some of them said they would put on tefillin.
Yeah,
and sure. The person, the protagonist of this story, said, he told it many years later, I think it was in one of my encounters, that from that time on, he never missed tefillin. Okay, and he's understood what it was. And there was a whole thing. The Rebbe went into a whole thing about American Judaism. I don't remember the details, but he answered the question about American Judaism, the future of American Judaism, that they were the future, and they had to do mitzvahs, and that they encouraged their friends to do mitzvahs,
right.
And that was going to guarantee me. And so when I said, I've been keeping putting on Shabbos ever, putting on tefillin ever since.
Right.
Okay. So so that's the. That's a rubbish thing already. You know, it says, that's what a chacham is for, to answer such questions. Commandments are called b'day shemayim, chutz meir shemayim. It says, how much you're going to make, and how, where you're going to live, and all that other stuff, says, that's already planned out. And Hashem knows what's going to happen. And if you want to know what's going to happen, so you have to go ask somebody who can see what's going to happen, and that person's called a prophet. But it says, but what about your Yirah Shemayim, your Avodas Hashem, that you're going to get better in doing what you're supposed to be doing? So for that you have a Chacham, that you have a Rebbe for. Right. And in the letter, the Rebbe put in the types of questions that should be asked in Yechidus, and what a person has to do to prepare beforehand to go into Yechidus, that a person should be able to be in the state of mind to be able to accept the advice that they were going to get. Okay, that's what the Rebbe wanted to do, because, understood, listen, I'm a rabbi, and what I really want to do is help people in, like, rabbi
sure.
matters. Okay, because I once heard...
I want to talk to you about your soul.
Yeah. I once heard a rabbi was asked yeah, sure. by a little kid, you know, so they introduced and said, so-and-so, this man's a rabbi. And so the little kid said, well, what do rabbis do? And this rabbi responded, I rabbi. The verb, the rabbi.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is what a rabbi does.
So a rabbi does, he rabbis.
Yet.
Yes, of course.
Yet. So it says, where am I? Everything's in the hands of heaven. Reshiva dvarim mechusim kulov. Yeah. And he says there's seven things a person doesn't know, you know, like how he's going to make money, for example. It's already been planned out.
Sure.
But it's not told to you. You don't know the day that you're going to die.
Right.
And these are all very good reasons, you know, because if a person knew when he was going to die, what would he do his whole lifetime?
Nothing.
Party. And then the day before, he'd say, oops.
Try to do tshuva.
Oops. Yeah. I'm going to do tshuva now.
Yeah. Dadgum, the calendar's off one day. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oops. When Mashiach is going to come.
Yeah.
Zehine, hishvu zel lezeh. It's all the same thing. All these seven things are the same. Mm. Yeah, so.
What do you mean they're the same?
That just that we don't know how much a person's going to make or where he's going to get his livelihood from. We don't know how it is that a person's going to... When is it Mashiach is going to come?
Yeah.
These are all hidden the same.
Okay.
So he says, so what do you want from me? Mm-hmm. These are not things that I know about. Now, as far as people not knowing when they're going to pass away or when things are going to happen to them, the Rebbe's office generally was a mess. There were piles of papers and books. The way the Rebbe would learn is he would take a book and he would open it up and he would read what he had to read from it, and then he'd put it down, and then he'd go grab another book. Okay, and he would read what he read, and he put this book on top of that book. So there were piles of books open up to like places, you know.
Like binary tree.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, okay, and letters and papers and things and stuff. And so one day the Rebbe asked Label Groner for file boxes. And he started putting papers into boxes and filing them and organizing them. And then on Chav Zayin Adar of Tashin Nun Aleph, whatever it was, so he gave Label Groner, he said, this is the last box. My office is clean. And the only thing that was really left in the office was the Shluchim books, was left on the table, and a couple other things, but you know, nominal things. But all the books were in the shelves, the Rebbe's office was clean. That day, the Rebbe had a stroke.
Yeah.
And his office became no longer his office. It became basically his hospital room for the next 2 years.
Right.
Okay. So he took care of all the business. Made sure everything was put away that had to be put away. Right. Didn't leave it to anybody else. Did the Rebbe know that he was going to have a stroke on Chav Zayin Adar Rishon? Sounds like it. Okay. A lot of times the Rebbe said he saw something but didn't know what he saw, like the time when he told Ariel Sharon not to travel.
Right.
So they said, do you see that something was going to happen? He said, no. He says the guy was tired and he'd been up all night and it wouldn't be so conducive to flying. So he gave a whole song and dance.
Right.
Okay. So that people would say, oh, yeah, okay. He made logical sense that he should change his ticket to Israel Because he was tired? What do you do on a plane for 14 hours?
Sleep.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And what happened to that flight he didn't take?
It got hijacked. It was the only LL flight that was hijacked. And they say the reason why it was hijacked is because
they
knew that he was going to be on that flight. They wanted him.
Right.
Okay, so does it have a seat? Yeah, but he never let on what he saw.
Yeah.
Well, Masha Kosa be a shot.
Yeah, really. Just to be very frank about it.
Yeah. Well, Masha Kosa be a shot. Yaitz v'chacham chadashim. It says go take counsel from these people. Yep. A person who is wise and takes counsel is silent. Yeah, there's a psukim over there. That would imply that you should go ask these people.
Yeah.
That you should go and get from them advice. So he said, they're not talking about a business. That's talking about asking questions in Torah. Hanikra Toshia, the Torah is called our salvation. Mm. Knowing how you should put your money is not called salvation. Okay, because if you've got more money, then you have more things to worry about. Whereas you have more Torah, then you're saved. It says to take advice. What does it mean to take advice? That you know how to make a leap year. Okay, you know how to calculate the moon phases, which is really probably the hardest thing there is in halacha.
Yeah.
So it says that's called taking advice. So what it says in the verse, to go get advice from a chacham, so it's talking about learn how to intercalculate the moon.
Right.
This whole deal of how to go about and making a leap year and a leap month, that's called advice and secret in the Gemara. You go look over there, it says that. Because it is so very hard. Ah, ha'emes agid l'shamayim li. He says, but, listen, I'm going to tell this to people who are going to listen to me. Ki ava mekalkelos hashora. It says, really, love gets in the way of things. It says, I'm doing this only because I love you.
Yeah.
And I really want you to understand that this is going to be the best thing for you. Mm. Because love covers over the eyes that you shouldn't see. I'm reading too much because it's all one sentence. That because of their great love for their own bodies and for the serving of Hashem, to serve Hashem with a fiery love, which is greater than their own love of their soul for Hashem. It says, so they understand that their body's going to have problems. Hashem should have mercy on them. It says it doesn't make any sense. This guy's got a problem. So what's he going to do? He's going to travel all the way here. Let's say the guy's got some kind of mental condition. Does it make sense for him? You know how people got around in 1793?
Sure.
And if they're lucky,
they got
a house or horse. Yeah, otherwise, they were walking.
Foot. Yeah.
Okay? So this guy's feeling sick. So he's going to travel all this way.
Right.
Does that make sense to travel merachik? Eitz merachik. The word eitz merachik, one of the commentaries says, it doesn't mean just geographically, but it means something which is far from me to give you. He says, what do I know about doctor bills and business dealings? If something is happening, you have a problem, you would be smart to sit back and enjoy it. Okay, why is this happening to you? It says, Es Hasher Hashem Oyev, Es Hashem, how's it go? Hashem, I think it's the Pusik. The one that Hashem loves He reproves.
He reproves, right. Proverbs.
Okay. Hashem loves you, and that's why this is happening to you. Okay, so there's a whole thing in the Gemara about Yisurim from Ava, that if a person has done sins, why do bad things happen to people? It's because of his sins. So a person looks back and he says, oh, I don't have any sins. I don't have anything that should warrant that this should be happening to me now. It's just that it would have to be, if you want to say that the punishment fits the crime, this is beyond anything that I did. Because, listen, a person is suffering somehow. Okay? How many people do you know actually have done some sort of a heinous sin? You know, people don't do things wrong. We're not talking about in the news. We're talking about people that you personally know.
Right, right, right.
Okay? Look at yourselves, for example. Okay? People don't do heinous crimes. Okay? And the fact that this is happening to him, okay, so it says, well, why is this happening to me? I didn't do anything wrong. So the Gemara says, well, maybe you wasted time. Okay? Hanging on Bittul Torah.
Yeah.
Okay? Because it says that Hashem is easier for Hashem to forgive idolatry, adultery, and murder than to forgive somebody who wastes time. He quoted that before in Tanya. Because you can make restitution for the first three, but how are you going to make up lost time?
Can't.
You're going to do more later? You could do more later also and have not wasted time now.
Right.
So the Gemara says, okay, look at that. And then it says, well, if you're not wasting time, then you must conclude that they're Yisurim from Ava.
Yeah.
They're not. And there's two ways of looking at Yisurim from Ava. There's one way is to say that this is in order to push the person to work better.
Mm.
Or another way of looking at it is, in a higher way, is beyond Gamzu Latova, this is a good thing that's happening to me.
Right.
It looks like it's not a good thing, but really it is a very good thing.
Right.
So the author over here is saying things are going wrong or not look so great. It's the best that it could be.
Right. Right.
And we should adopt an attitude rather than coming and running to me that I should have to explain things to you. So just take it on account that Hashem is doing things the best way possible.
Yes.
Okay, Hashem is running the world the best way that the world should be run.
The best benefit for you.
Correct. Okay, we are being taken care of in the best possible manner by Hashem.
Right.
And if you don't agree with it, nope, okay.
Who are you?
Neither does any two-year-old.
Because those who Hashem loves, He reproves.
Right.
That's the verse right there.
Right.
Okay. We will stop here on the top of page 68 where it says, Kamei Avarachma. To be continued. Thank you.